T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Okay, that was the first half. We need to be working some on the second half, okay?
Welcome to the second half.
It's real simple. You got 2 more quarters and that's it.
This is the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
This is your time.
On America's Sports Voice.
This is our team. This is us. Let's go right now. Let's get it off now. Let's go.
KMOX.
7 o'clock hour. Alex Ferrario back with you, an hour away from Chili's week in hockey. Amy Markscores will roll in at 8 o'clock, and we will talk straight hockey for you until 10 o'clock. Plenty of Game 6 preview, Game 5 recap, Joe Vitale, Keith Tkachuk. Lots to get into. This hour, we will chat with Rex Hudler, get a little baseball conversation in, as the Cardinals will take on the Kansas City Royals tomorrow night. 2 games at Busch Stadium, then a day off, and then 3 games over the weekend against the Atlanta Braves. Plain and simple, it's going to be a party in downtown St. Louis. Plain and simple. Man, props to Blues fans. And if you're listening, give me a call. I'm kind of curious of what that environment was last night over at Enterprise. Patrick Kelly, our outstanding booth assistant throughout the season for the Blues, was at the event, the watch party that was taking place at Enterprise. From what I understand, that lower bowl was sold out. Now, some people didn't make it, but it was sold out. And I'm kind of curious of how that was, because you always see it at this time of the year in the playoffs of teams that are further into the postseason, where they have watch parties for fans to come out. And heck, the Winnipeg series, when the Winnipeg Jets were in St. Louis, they kept showing video of people standing outside the stadium in Winnipeg watching the television screen. Same for home games. And that was jam-packed. I mean, I get it. It's Winnipeg. There's nothing else to do. It's cold. You don't want to be outside, but it's hockey, so you force yourself. Like, I get it. Something to do. But to have an arena that packed for a road game that didn't even, I don't want to say mean anything, but it didn't result in a team being eliminated. Just resulted in a team taking a 3-2 series lead. That just shows you how hockey mad these fans are, which I love. And again, I posed the question last hour. I'll pose it again. Amy and I will talk about it tonight. Is tomorrow the biggest game in franchise history for the Blues? I was thinking about it this afternoon. Going to the Stanley Cup final, first time since 1970, but if you take those 3 seasons into consideration, those are a lot different years. Hockey was a lot different at that time. I don't want to spoil it, so we'll save it. But call in 314-436-7900. We'll take your thoughts on that all night long. But 2016, beating the Blackhawks. Roof almost blew off of that place. Double overtime in round 2. Pat Maroon scores off of Ben Bishop to advance to the conference final. Even louder than the Stanley Cup, or I'm sorry, than the Blackhawks win. And now you're talking about advancing to the first or to the final round in the Stanley Cup playoffs? That's dangerous. Place is going to be mad. And if it goes to Game 7 and they have another watch party at Enterprise Center, might as well just put people on the ice and make it look like there's hockey going on, because that's what it's going to feel like in that arena. So we'll talk a lot more about that. We're going to dive into a little more Blues talk with Darren Pang in our next segment. Again, Rex Hudler, some Cardinals talk in the 7:30 time slot. And then we got Chili's Week in Hockey from 8 to 10 o'clock. 314-436-7900. Telephone number, text line, Darren Pang. Little guy with gumption, I believe the nickname is. Fox Sports Midwest. He joins us next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Lindbergh
on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Well, Marty just called in and hung up. Unfortunately, I couldn't talk to him, but he said that watch party was unbelievable. Felt like a home game, which, God, I love to hear that. Can't wait to see what the watch parties will be like in the Stanley Cup final against the Boston Bruins. But we got to get there first. We got to take down the San Jose Sharks tomorrow night. Why am I saying we? I'm not a part of the team. You know who is part of the team? Part of the team of Fox Sportsman West and the broadcast crew, Darren Pang, little guy with gumption of Fox Sportsman West. He joins us now. Panger, I know you're pumped up for tomorrow night, buddy, just as much as we are here at the KMOX studios.
You know, Alex, I don't think there's any doubt about it. I did enjoy today, though. I really found that Game 4, to travel in for Game 5 in San Jose, an afternoon game, not just an afternoon game, a noon local start, and then coming on back home. You know what? I can see these players are in world-class shape, and I give them all the credit in the world because I'm exhausted, but I am getting regrouped and recharged and rejuvenated, and I'm looking forward to going to the rink tomorrow morning and listening to the players and finding out, you know, where San Jose is at, to be quite honest with you. Yeah. How are they feeling? It's an elimination game for the first time in the series. They're banged up, and it looks to me like the Blues have a lot of mojo and a lot of momentum and a lot of experience in this situation.
Panger, I'm curious, what was it like watching a hockey game yesterday afternoon in a library that used to be known as the SAP Center?
It did get quiet. There's no question about that. I, for one, hardly ever went to a library, so I'm not sure what that sounds like. But I hear you're supposed to be quiet, and that's probably why I never went, because I don't seem to be quiet very often. But the fact is that the Blues' goal going into that game was to quiet down the arena. Now, right. Keep in mind, first couple of shifts, Evander Kane rifles one off the pipe. The place was jumping. I mean, it was like, whoa, they just got shot out of a cannon. But once again, the Blues bent, but they never broke. And I think that's been a real big theme for the St. Louis Blues all year long. Even if they would have given up that first goal, I was still really confident that they'd be able to get back into the game. I thought San Jose would offer them everything early on, and if they could weather that, then they would be just fine, and certainly they were just fine. And yes, the building was quiet. I give the San Jose fans a lot of credit, though. With about 6 minutes to go, the game was over. We all know that. But the place was still, I'm not saying it was full to capacity, but I bet it was three-quarters full.
Yeah.
They were hanging around. They were waiting for something to happen. So I give the San Jose Sharks crowd a lot of credit.
Well, and you gotta wait, too, in those hockey games, because we've seen plenty of times so far this season, 4 minutes can change an entire hockey game despite what the score truly is. Panger, I'm curious, because I think curiosity is the best way to describe tomorrow night's game, because if you go back to the Winnipeg Jets series and Winnipeg facing elimination, the Blues completely dominated the Winnipeg Jets, which I think a lot of people would anticipate tomorrow night, but you got to give it to the San Jose Sharks, man. They've been into two series already where their backs have been against the wall, and they've found a way to get out of it.
You know, going back to Game 6 against Winnipeg, Alex, and you're right about that, Winnipeg, for me, was every bit as good as this team. And they were healthy in that Game 6. Think about that for a second. You know, it's not two rounds later, and the way that the Blues played, that's the picture that they visualized in their head. That's the picture that when the coaching staff puts clips together of their forecheck, the first man in, the second man on the puck, the third man hounding, their neutral zone coverage, their D-zone coverage. So they know what the picture looks like. Going into this Game 6 tomorrow, other than, you know, you win the game, you go to the Stanley Cup final, so there's a lot of thoughts that might be going on in your head. They're banged up. So I see no reason why the Blues don't start the game exactly the way they started Game 4, exactly the way they started Games 5 and 6 or 6 and 7 against Dallas. And then, obviously, you mentioned Game 6 against Winnipeg. They will be fully prepared to start this game on the right foot, knowing that if they're tentative at all, then the crowd will get tentative. They know that they've got to be on their toes. They know that they've got to get pucks in a certain area. They're led by the Barbashev, Steen, and Sundquist line. And I would go to Vegas and wager that line starts again. Would you not take
that bet? I was going to say, I'm going to take you up on that bet, because I could almost guarantee that's going to be the line that starts out tomorrow against the San Jose Sharks. And it's funny, Panger, because we talk so much about Jordan Binnington's role on this team and Ryan O'Reilly and Vladimir Tarasenko, Jaden Schwartz, and so on and so forth. But the guy that I feel like people don't talk as much about is an Oscar Sundquist. And you talk about a complete turnaround of a season for a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko or Jaden Schwartz. I think you could talk about Oscar Sundquist and have one of the most progressive seasons of any player on this roster.
I'll take it a step further. During the year, and it was somewhere around February, it was one of my massive declarations. He is the most improved player in the entire National Hockey League.
Yeah.
And I'll stay with that. From the beginning of training camp to where I'm not the pro scout that I thought I was, but I said, I don't think he can play on this team. I don't think he has the foot speed to play on this team.
Right.
And lo and behold, he's just proven everybody wrong, if that's the right way to phrase it, because a lot of people absolutely know what he's all about. They've seen him in the minors. They've saw him with the World Junior, Team USA, all that stuff. But I hadn't seen him. And if that was the player he was going to be early on, my evaluation was he can't play here. Then he starts playing a little bit more. Instead of 4 and 5 minutes where you hardly ever see him and he's sitting on the bench, now he's playing 6 and 7 minutes. Then he was playing 8 to 10 minutes. Then, now I'm like, I looked at Doug Armstrong one time and I said, well, now I get it. Now I see what you guys are talking about. This guy's a horse, an absolute competitive horse. He's under the skin of San Jose. They don't like him because he finishes every check. He kind of leans into them after every whistle, but he never retaliates. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, well, that's...
He never retaliates. He's so disciplined and has such composure on the ice.
That's the biggest thing to me, Panger, and it's not just Oscar Sundquist. Plenty of guys on this roster, like Alex Pietrangelo taking that cross check to the face by Haley in the previous game, but Sundquist is one of the biggest ones to me. Like, he will get hit by a player after a whistle, and he will just skate away like it didn't even happen because he knows that he just drew a penalty, or at least he drew the attention of the officials. I think that's the best attribute of Oscar Sundquist.
And he has drawn 10 minor penalties so far. And that leads the entire NHL.
Wow.
So, but it's not like he hasn't been getting hit hard, too. He got hit hard one time in that third period. I was surprised. He got himself to the bench, but it was a struggle for him. He did come out some 3 or 4 minutes later. Tarasenko got hit hard by Kane. You mentioned Pietrangelo. He got hit hard by I think that was Brendan Dillon that stepped in.
Yeah.
Pietrangelo, and he was kind of flexing his knee a little bit or flexing his leg. So, it's not like they're not getting hit, but Oscar Sundquist, Barbashev, and Alexander Steen, they have been the model of consistency and how you have to play in the playoffs.
And the Blues have done an incredible job, too, of hitting with a purpose, Panger. And Craig Berube's used that phrase a lot throughout this postseason, but not having endless checks and finding a way to get the puck off, create turnovers. And right now, for how shaky the San Jose Sharks team looks in their own zone, the Blues just need to continue to throw their bodies around. And they're not only going to pick up some hits and build the physical play, but they're also going to create some turnover and scoring opportunities from it.
That's exactly right. The first man in's job is to take... as Steve Ott likes to use, take some skin.
Nice.
You have to do one or the other. You have to get the puck. If it's a loose puck, you're not going to go hit the man that doesn't have the puck.
Yeah.
But so right away, F1 goes in and he gets some skin. F2 better be quick up. He's got to be close to them. That's why when the Blues are playing a game that's too far away, that's where it starts. It starts on the forecheck. So F2's got to be quick up. He's got to get the puck. He's not going in there to hit anybody. He needs the puck. And then F3 gets open, so now they've got themselves a nice little offensive zone cycle game. For Craig Berube, for as tough as he played, and I played against him both in the minors and in the NHL, and broadcast a ton of games that he played in. For as tough as he was, he patrolled the left wing really, really well. And he hit like crazy, but he was disciplined. The team is playing the way Craig Berube played over 1,000 games in the NHL.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit more scoring skill along the way, but they're playing the way in which he visualized a good, disciplined team playing the game of hockey.
We got a couple more minutes with Darren Pang. Give me your thoughts on the decision to play Erik Karlsson in Game 5. Was that the right move by Pete DeBoer, and what do you think the outcome will be for Karlsson going into Game 6?
Well, number one, the winners of Game 5 in the history of the game have won 70% of the series. So there's a strong push to win Game 5.
Yeah.
If you think, for me, I've always felt this way, and if anybody asks me my advice, if you think that you can go out there and contribute to the game and not leave the game, if you're playing injured, not hurt, or hurt, not injured, however you want to phrase it, can you finish the game and can you be a competitive player? If the answer is no and no, then you've got to suck it up and not play. And that's being unselfish. I think when you play and you tell everybody you're okay and then you can't finish, I think you're being selfish a little bit in that respect. And I'm not saying Erik Karlsson's a selfish person or he was thinking that way, but you know you're going to get banged up. And so, I mean, hindsight is what it is, but I think they'd rather have an Erik Karlsson that didn't play game five, that had those days of rest. That'd be 1, 2, 3, a lot of travel, you know, coming here for game six and emptying the tank, regardless of if they won or lost without him. So I think in hindsight, they believe the player, they believe the medical staff, but at the end of the day, they didn't get the player they were looking for in game five.
Well, and I tell you what, Panger, the more threatening thing to tomorrow night's game to me would be for the Sharks to decide that they're not going to go with Karlsson, they're not going to go with Hertl if he's still banged up, and play a couple of fresh players. Now, you are taking the talent and skill out of the lineup, but you are adding some fresh legs to the lineup that could do some damage.
And that's exactly right. Dylan Gambrell has only played one game as a centerman, so a young player in the NHL. You go down the list of players that they've got that they could possibly play, Lucas Raddle, Radim Simek. I mean, not experienced players. We're talking Tim Heed would probably go on the blue line. I would imagine he's only played 2 playoff games so far this year. So you're right. It's not like there's a lot of well-known names there, but the energy that they would get, an infusion of players like that, would still be a boost for them. I'm not sure if young players can last the test of a match like that, but certainly they would get a boost from the fresh legs right off the hop.
One more for Darren Pang before we let him go here on a Monday night. Panger, people have talked so much about Jordan Binnington, and rightfully so, for what he has done. But in your opinion, a former goaltender and a longtime analyst, what's the most impressive feature that you've seen from Jordan Binnington so far in the postseason?
I think his bounce-back ability. It's a fun phrase to use, too. But I mean, even during the regular season, I mean, didn't lose very many games, but you know, following a loss, he's 11-2. His goals against following a loss is 1.81. His save percentage is almost 94%. So for fans out there that don't know what that, I mean, 94% of the shots that come your way, you stop after you lose a game. I think that's incredible. That's just the mental stability that he has. Technically, I've said this since he joined the team in Philadelphia, I've been impressed with the technical aspect. He's always on top of his crease. He has very good hands. He covers up a lot of loose pucks. There's very few holes in his game. But I think the number one thing would be his ability to bounce back after a loss.
Well, and I tell you what, it really feels like he hasn't given up a bad goal at all throughout this postseason.
Well, he would probably say he has, which I love about him.
Yeah.
He's very accurate and succinct in how he goes about some of the goals that go in on him.
Uh-huh.
But between he and Dave Alexander, they get things tightened up really, really quick. So if there's been any holes, he's tightened them up and he's fixed them. And that's also a sign of a kid that's listening as well and not too stubborn to make the changes.
Yeah, I love talking about Binnington. Darren Pang, thank you so much for hopping on with us tonight. You know, an update on game six, according to Greg Wyshynski, saying that Pete DeBoer wouldn't disclose if Pavelski, Hertl, or Karlsson were going to play in Game 6, or even if they were going to fly with the team. So, of course, coaches hold that information close to the vest before the game to, you know, just for the personal side of it. But, interesting point to pay attention to going into tomorrow afternoon's morning skate. Danny, hang on the line. We'll come back. We're going to switch to some Cardinals talk. Rex Hudler of Kansas City Royals broadcast team. He joins us next to talk a little Cardinals and Royals. It starts tomorrow night on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Lindbergh.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
We'll switch over to a little Cardinals talk. Redbirds and Royals in action tomorrow night. 2 games at Busch Stadium and a day off on Thursday, and 3 games against the Atlanta Braves. Cardinals come back home after a tough road trip. 2 wins, 1 against the Pirates, 1 against the Rangers. No, I'm sorry, not the Pirates. 1 against the Braves, 1 against the Rangers. So Cardinals will try and get a little home cooking going to try and get out of this rut that they've been in since the beginning of May. We'll welcome in Rex Hudler in a couple of moments. But before that, we got Danny patiently waiting on the line. Danny, what's going on, buddy?
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call. After watching that hockey game, it really impressed upon me the level of sportsmanship that they held their emotions in check. And I started, thinking about that. And, They line up at the end of every series. They shake hands. I don't know when they started doing that, if they've always done it, but they always do it. And they shake hands, you know, in soccer before the game, you know. But I think it's the only sport. But my question, I got thinking about a baseball series that the Dodgers had with the Cardinals in the 80s, and they agreed beforehand to shake hands after the series. I'd never seen it before done in baseball. And I was wondering which series they did that in. I was trying to remember. I couldn't remember. But it really impressed me, you know, that they decide to line up and shake hands. I've never seen a baseball team do that, you know, after a series. You know, they usually mob each other, but they didn't do it that time.
Yeah.
So that was my question.
Yeah, it's a good question. I appreciate it. I'd have to look that up to find out when the Dodgers did it, because I know exactly what you're talking about. But boy, oh boy, just trying to remember when that truly was. But, you know, that's one of the best things about hockey. And there's so many things that I feel like sets hockey above the rest. But when you talk about the sportsmanship in the game, you know, after you have two teams that basically try and kill each other on the ice, I mean, they're going at each other. And especially if you go back into the 90s, the teams hated each other in the postseason. You're doing everything you can to win. And then after a 6 or 7 game series, when you were talking smack and crushing guys' bones into the wall, you're shaking hands with them afterwards and talking to them about how great of a game it was. So to me, that's one of the coolest things about hockey. The sportsmanship is just beyond belief. And I'll tell you what, Danny, there's a really great article on NHL.com. It was posted last year in the playoffs by Dave Stubbs. He's a columnist for NHL.com. And it talks about how the playoff handshake line is a winning tradition. And I wouldn't guarantee it so much for you to sit down and read it and talk about how it became a tradition and how much it really means to hockey players. So great phone call. We appreciate it, Danny. And keep up the Blues hope for this game 6 tomorrow night. We'll keep taking your phone calls. Keep sending them in. 314-436-7900. But I want to switch over to a little baseball talk now for a few minutes and welcome in Rex Hudler, the former Cardinals infielder, the former Cardinals utility player from 90 to 92. Now he's a part of the Kansas City Royals broadcast team, and he'll be in St. Louis tomorrow night for a little baseball action. Rex, great to have you on with us, buddy. How's it feel to be back in St. Louis?
Alex, what a question, man. Right here in the heartland of America, not in the beautiful city of Kansas City, but the wonderful city of St. Louis, and it's beautiful. Just across the state, man. We're happy to be here.
Well, and you came at the perfect time, too. The rain is going away. It's not flooding like it has been, and now you just get nice sunny weather and perfect baseball weather. Am I right?
Oh, we're all over that, too. And you know what? Our team is much better than our wins show. I can tell you, Alex, the speed in the offense is great, but you know, we got to have starting pitching. The starting pitching has really kind of slowed us down a little bit early this year.
Yeah, and we'll dive into that, but I got to start off talking about Rex Hudler, the bobblehead, because, of course, Tuesday night is going to be Rex Hudler bobblehead night for some select Cardinals fans. Have you had a bobblehead before, and now what's the feeling like to have one in St. Louis?
Never had a bobblehead and was totally shocked and almost floored when I got a call from the Cardinals this winter asking me if it was okay if they did a bobblehead of me. And my first question to them was, why? Said, well, we do alumni every so often, and we want to honor you. And I said, honor me for what? I didn't do anything. And then they said, well, you're a part of the alumni. We know you're a Royals broadcaster. You guys are coming to town, and we would like to honor you. And I said, okay, look, I am honored. But you guys must have run out of alumni already. I mean, come on. So I did everything I could to kind of say, well, really, why? How come? But the bottom line is I'm extremely flattered. My time here in St. Louis was a blessing. When Whitey Herzog traded for me in April of 1990, that was one of the greatest days of my life. When Buck Rogers, manager of the Montreal Expos, and Dave Dombrowski, who was the general manager of the Expos, called me into a hotel in Houston, Texas, and told me that Whitey Herzog of the St. Louis Cardinals have traded for me. I contained myself in front of them, but when I left the hotel room, I flew to the elevator. I didn't even think my feet hit the ground. And I called my wife, Jennifer, and said, honey, we are going to the World Series. I'll never forget that. It was a wonderful experience to get here. The 3 years, I got to meet all the Hall of Famers from here. Red Shandies is one of my favorites all time. I got to sit on the bench with Red, pick his brain because I rode the Pine for Nine most of the time. Whitey quit after 2 years. After a couple of months, he quit. And then Shandies took over for 2 weeks before Joe Torre came on. So that was pretty interesting. Went from two Hall of Famers to another would-be Hall of Famer, Joe Torre, as he became a Hall of Fame manager. So really, my time in St. Louis was one of the best.
Well, and that reason right there is why you're getting a bobblehead, because Cardinals fans still love Rex Hudler, even though you were only here for 3 years. Still three great years that people remember your time in St. Louis. So, Rex, give me an idea, because everyone always loves these I-70 series every time you get the matchups with the Royals and Cardinals. And you mentioned it, despite the record, this Royals team is a lot better than what it shows.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Our run differential is really much greater than it was last year. So, you know, we're not losing by minute much, but we have a speed offense. It's really fun. It's fun to watch. We have Merrifield, who led the league the last 2 years in steals. Mondesi, who presently leads the league in stolen bases. And then they went out and got Hamilton. They have some runners. They have some guys. There's some power there, too. Jorge Soler, who we got from Wade Davis from the Cubs. When we made that deal with them a few years ago. And then, you know, of course, this kid, Hunter Dozier, our third baseman, has been really coming on this year, in the top 10 in hitting, and he's got some power. So there's some pieces that are there, but the starting pitching has been a little bit tough. We're breaking in a couple of young guys, and then the bullpen early in the season didn't do exactly like we want, but they're starting to settle it in now as our back-end guys are looking like Diekman. He's a left-handed veteran, seven-year veteran that we got. Kim Boxberger, also an Ian Kennedy, went from the starting rotation to the back end of the bullpen, and they're mixing him in as a closer. So right now, I don't think the Royals are a huge threat. But you know, in baseball, Alex, you just never know night to night who's going to win a game.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I don't think people would be saying the same thing about the Texas Rangers being a huge threat. But unfortunately, the Cardinals only found a way to pick out one victory. And that's just kind of how baseball goes. But Rex, you know better than anybody, as you're talking about the pitching struggles for the Kansas City Royals, that may be one of the hardest spots in terms of depth to try and grow guys at a rapid pace, right?
That's right. But you know, one good thing is that we have a great general manager in Dayton Moore, who has pedigree. He took the Royals in 14 and 15 from a built team from their home farm system, and he went to back-to-back World Series, and we won one in 15. So he has the blueprint. He understands what it's going to take to rebuild the bullpen. So last year, and they had four really good draft picks, and they got college pitchers and all top-of-the-line pitchers. This kid, Brady Singer, he was the top line of all of them. And they're in the minors presently this year dealing. And they're in A-ball. They won't be there much longer because they're just working over these A-ball kids. Double-A, triple-A. College pitching comes quicker. We're going to have three horses here, two righties and a lefty, in this rotation here that are going to be to stay for 5 or 6 years. Coming real soon. We're excited about that.
Rex, talk to me a little bit about Hunter Dozier, because a guy last season who I believe, what was it, only 11 home runs last year for the Royals, and now he's got 9 through only 43 games. That's a pretty big turnaround for this guy.
It is. You know, he was a number one pick by the Royals a few years ago, had some injury issues like all of us do. Come on, it's not easy. People think that you're just going to go right there. But Hunter Dozier has found out who he is. He's a guy who's a lot of solid contact. He's like, his exit velo is like 95 plus on 70% of his hits. He's found out who he is. He's a gap to gap hitter with some power. And now at third base, gosh, he's found out who he is over there too. So he's very comfortable at third. He looks like a polished veteran already. And really, this is just his first full season he's experiencing.
Got a couple more minutes with Rex Hudler, the television color commentator for the Kansas City Royals, as the Cardinals and Royals will play two starting tomorrow night. Rex, I know you keep an eye on what the Cardinals do as well, so give me your thoughts on the first portion of the season for the Cards.
You know, if you're a Redbird fan, you've got to be feeling pretty good. Every year, your management brings out a team. They put together the guys. To have Goldschmidt come in, I was shocked when they landed him. I mean, that's a wonderful piece. That guy right there, he's an MVP. So to continue to add pieces like Mozeliak does, they got to be really pumped. I mean, my wife and I were here last night. We had an off night here in St. Louis, and we were marveling at Hicks. This kid, 101, 102, 103, and my wife, who follows baseball but not like I do, was like, wow, look at how smooth his delivery is. And he's throwing that hard? I go, yeah, honey. You know, the only thing I knew about pitching before I became a broadcaster and an analyst was it was hard to hit. And now, Alex, man, I'm able to break that stuff down and how they separate their hands over their knee and you know, their follow through and the way they finish, and they got some nice pitching.
Well, and it feels good to be in the broadcast booth when that guy's throwing 103 and not at the plate, right?
Oh, you better believe that's right. Although I never saw a fastball I didn't like. That's the only thing I could hit. But, you know, other than that, Alex, having a chance to be a Redbird, it's just one of the highlights of my 21-year baseball career. And I can tell you that even now, I mean, I have dreams of hitting the gap in Old Busch Stadium. And when I got towards close to second base and I heard the roar of 40,000 people, I could not stop. There's no way I'm stopping at second base. And we had Whitey Herzog on our broadcast last year. And Whitey came up to the booth and told my partner, Ryan Lefevre, he goes, you know, he's the only player I ever had that got a standing ovation for getting thrown out at third base, you know, because I would cartwheel in the third base. And I remember getting up the few times I was called safe and brushing myself off and looking at the fans. And the fans, you know, they had spit flying everywhere. They were yelling and hollering. It just really made me feel good to entertain those fans.
That's incredible. Rex, one more before we let you go, and this is a little off baseball topic, but I know being a St. Louis native for a few years and loving St. Louis so much, I'm sure you're aware of the Blues run right now, headed to hopefully the Stanley Cup final. Your time in St. Louis, did hockey pop out to you as being such a big thing for St. Louis fans just as much as baseball?
Oh, absolutely. Are you kidding me? Hall & Oates? Man, that was when it was going on back then. It was fun. Jennifer sang the anthem at Busch Stadium, my wife, and she sang it there at that little barn you guys used to have there. What was the name of that arena?
The Keel?
Yeah, the Keel. That's where they would go. Shoot, yeah, it was happening there. You know, to have Hull in there, you know, that's a Hall of Famer. It's fantastic. We loved it. Yeah, hockey was big back then.
I love it. Rex Hudler, man, we love having you pop on KMOX with us, home for the Cardinals baseball, and of course we love having you back in St. Louis. Enjoy the game these next couple of days, and enjoy that bobblehead tomorrow night.
And I get to throw out the first pitch, Alex, man. I'm pumped, man. I'm gonna go right to the slab for all the great Cardinal pitchers through the ball, man. I'm so pumped. I just hope to throw a strike.
And then do a cartwheel to home plate afterwards.
I might do a head first fly, believe it.
Rex, it's great to talk with you, sir. Have fun this week.
Thank you, Alex.
I tell you what, Bob Gibson, Chris Carpenter, Rex Hudler at Busch Stadium. Fun to catch up with them, no doubt about it. Real quick, a response to Danny's question earlier. I was looking it up. Alex, our producer this evening, Cardinals and Dodgers back in 2004. I'm sorry, 2004 in the NLDS, Cardinals and Dodgers shook hands. And then in the NLCS, Cardinals and Astros did the same thing. Or did I flip those around? I had it written down. Cardinals and Dodgers, Cardinals and Astros. Yeah, DSCS. But back in 2004 when they shook hands. So that's when that happened. Always fun doing some research and learning some things. We'll come back and wrap up the 7 o'clock hour. Get set for Chili's Week in Hockey as Amy Markscores will hop in before we kick off 2 hours of hockey talk here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, wrapping up this hour. Getting set for Chili's Week in Hockey. My co-host Amy Markscores rolls in before we kick off 2 hours of hockey talk. Markscores, what's up?
I am so ready for tomorrow night's game. I don't even know how I'm going to sleep. It probably doesn't help that I have a giant canteen of coffee.
Hey, you
in front
walked
of me.
In with a mug the size of your face of coffee.
But I'm so excited about this game. And okay, I'm God, trying not
you
to
don't
get,
sound like a fangirl
I'm
at all.
I'm trying not to get ahead of myself. Well, wait a minute. This is the Sports Open Line. We're supposed to
Now you call it the Sports Open Line.
What is the Sports Open Line. So I'm a little bit casual now. This is the fan in me.
This is cash.
Freaking out.
This is cash, but you'll switch over to journalist once we kick in the next hour.
Absolutely. Nothing but professionalism.
That's all she is, guys. That's all she is. Professional. Actually, I'll tell you what. We'll get Joey's take on you being a professional at 8:15.
I am incredibly professional. But, I mean... We had this talk earlier today. The Blues had some media availability, and we were interviewing the players. And afterwards, you and I were talking how there's a dual personality going on. There's the professional side of you. You're asking questions. You're sitting on media row, not allowed to cheer or smile or show any emotion whatsoever. And then there's like the 14-year-old me.
Yeah.
It's totally freaking out.
Which is like 60 years ago. Can you imagine? Like,
I know.
You even remember that?
Barely.
First of all, I need to correct your statement because we don't speak in public to each other.
That's right.
You know better than that. No, I'm just joking. Yeah, it is funny how it works because, you know, my dad, who's a huge Blues fan and, you know, cliche saying he's been a Blues fan forever, he called me today and he's like, Al, it's like, you don't understand. It's like, I'm almost 60. And I've been watching this Blues team from day one.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, they're about to go to the Stanley Cup final. It's like, he told me, he's like, I thought I'd die before that happened.
Yeah.
And well, I said, well,
you started to feel that way.
Yeah, it really did. And we'll dive into this once we open up Chili's Week in Hockey, but fans felt that way. And now you're sitting here on the cusp of something that nobody predicted. Maybe that was the key. You wanted to get there when nobody expected you to.
You're the dark horse candidate.
You are the dark horse candidate. That's the key.
That's what the team was doing. They were sandbagging early so that everybody would let their guard down. This was their master plan all
along. I wish my poker game worked that way, like their game works in hockey. Amy, we'll talk to you in just a couple of minutes. That's going to put a wrap on the Munganess Honda Sports Open Line. Chili's Week in Hockey comes your way after the top of the hour news right here on KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.